Arcade. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Goodness gracious, it feels like Tuesday to me, but I know better. The clock on the wall that's connected to the atomic time server or something, and some uranium isotope going blip, 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 tells me, no, it's Thursday. And I believe it. I believe it. It just feels like Tuesday because it's been so confounded long since I've been behind the board. And June has been a very, very busy month. No getting around that. I'm Bob. This is The Horn, in case you didn't know. If you're new to the program, by all means, I hope you'll feel welcome. This is what we like to call conversation radio. This is a conversation that's been going on for, oh, goodness me, in excess of 5 years. And it just takes place for 3 hours every night among those who wish to call and share their thoughts. Everyone is welcome. And if the spirit moves you, I hope you will. I hope you will join in. Now, just to keep things on an even keel and make sure that we're all singing off the same page in the hymnal, so to speak, a reminder: my time behind the microphone this time through is brief. Last night, tonight, tomorrow night, and Monday night. Before we hit the road again. And we're going to hit the road with a vengeance. Tuesday will be tech day. As a matter of fact, John Fox will probably be up in the middle of the night, his night, my day, as we work out all the hinks and kinks to the broadcast and video angles of Dr. Bill O'Brien's PRISM West Virginia Academy, which will begin on Wednesday. So, show Monday, nothing Tuesday, and the PRISM West Virginia Summer Academy begins on Wednesday. A reminder for those of you who may not know, hey Bob, what's PRISM? Let me tell you. PRISM, West Virginia and America's Founders. Let me just share some of the topics with you. Lectures on colonial America. The colonial roots of America's founding. The ideological foundations of American independence. A workshop on the founders' ideological education. Clash of cultures with Native Americans. American independence and constitution making. The Philadelphia Convention. The Philadelphia Miracle, or was it? Anti-federalism, opposition forces form, ratification, launching the new ship of state, what the founders have wrought, 1789 to 1815. Then on Thursday, July the 7th, we move forward in time just a little bit. The American economy through the 19th century, military strategies, North and South, post-Reconstruction economy in America, meet Clara Barton, Civil War in the New River Valley, origins of philosophical conflict leading toward the Civil War, the Supreme Court and America's founders, Dred Scott and the founders, the post-Reconstruction Supreme Court, the American Civil War in an international context. looking at the American Civil War through primary sources. What we are, what others believe we are, a look at the 19th century through fashion. We're talking about nearly 3 weeks of intense American history discussion, lecture, debate, and dialogue. And that all begins on Wednesday, the 29th of June, and concludes on the 14th of July. The Horn will be broadcasting all of it. I hope you're going to be tuning in. It'll be on the Horn audio stream. It will also be on Ustream, ustream.tv. Just search American History Seminar. I think there's a misspell in there. It's seminary, but if you just look for American History Seminar, it'll pop right up, and the live stream will be there for you. So that's the way the schedule's going to work. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, then Tuesday, then the following week after the 4th of July holiday. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then the following week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I believe. Let me check. Just make sure. Thursday. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I say again that this is of critical importance because the other side likes nothing better than lying about what American history is. And this is the antidote to that. So that's the world of the Horn in a nutshell for the next couple of weeks. We will take the 4th of July off. I will do what I frequently do, stand on the porch and let passers-by think I'm crazy by just standing on the porch and reading the Declaration of Independence. I like to do that. I think it needs to be read out loud once in a while. Because while it was published widely, it was also read in town squares and so forth. Because the authors of the Declaration and the Continental Congress had to build some support for what was a pretty revolutionary, that's why we call it that, a pretty revolutionary act. Except for that incredibly never mind. A lot of bigotry in the Declaration of Independence, too, about the heathen savages. That's what we've got coming up. And thanks to you who kicked in last night to help us get to our fundraising goal. Instead of talking about the Thrifty 250 this month, I think we'll talk about the Every Penny Counts month. Thank you to all of you, because when you support the Horn, there's no subscription fee, there's no set amount. When you support the Horn, you're supporting everyone who wants to engage in this dialogue, in this discussion. It is a cooperative effort, to say the least. So thank you. And the more the merrier, I might add. You know the contribution button is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute, PayPal button, and snail mail address. You may, as you see fit, either way, contribute and help keep things on the air. Yeah, David in Tennessee noting that Prism West Virginia is everything, everything Bachman and Hannity don't want you to have access to. That's the absolute truth. It really is. Because people who know American history will not be hoodooed and the fooled by the outright falsehoods that these right-wingers and phony baloney imaginary Christians and religion industry types and right-wing libertarian think tankers. They don't want you to have this kind of information. Because if you've got this long view stuff, then you understand what you get a better understanding of why you're standing where you're standing, as opposed to this. Well, I mean, I heard it. You know, I mentioned last night that I heard this stupid right-wing religion industry broadcaster from the American Family Association Radio Tupelo, Mississippi, as I was driving through Indiana. He's all worried about the little fetuses. And, you know, sooner or later, if you listen to that kind of crap long enough, you will hear, America was founded on Judeo-Christian values by Christian men. Which is, of course, an absolute and utter lie. But their lies have gotten such purchase that now they repeat quotes from people like George Washington that didn't exist, that he didn't say, and just pretend that he did, and everybody, well, I didn't know George Washington was a born-again believer and spoke in tongues. I didn't know that. And John Adams, I had no idea he was a member of the Pentecostal Apostolic Holiness Herpetological Seminary and Congregation. But if they done said it on the American Family Religion Radio, I reckon got's to be true. And how's about that? Looky there. Thomas Jefferson's baptismal certificate. Never mind the fact that these people were deists, which would have been, for the 18th century, roughly the equivalent of a agnostic, free thinker. Jefferson, you'll recall, wrote his own Bible, his own New Testament, in which he took out all the claptrap and miracles, and retained all the stuff of all the words of Jesus about living a decent life. Yeah, that never goes over well when you remind a religion industrialist about it. So they just make stuff up. Right. So that's where the program is off and running toward this evening. I want to go back, if I may. I want to go back to something, a story that I mentioned toward the end of the program in my conversation last night with Albert. Because, call me cranky. Hey, you're cranky. Yes, I am. Call me cranky. But I want to make sure, absolutely certain, that everyone listening to this program comes away with this information, because this is important. You know, of course, that the only sponsor besides listener contributions that the Horn has is Coal River Mountain Watch. You know that. And you know that I've described them as the hardest working, bravest people I know. I do that because they are, based upon my observations. They don't quit. They don't know how to quit. More than any other organization, they are up in the industry and government's face, demanding the end of mountaintop removal and the Appalachian apocalypse. And something that we have long said has been borne out in real, hard, peer-reviewed science. Published in the journal Environmental Research is information that makes clear, once and for all, that that mountaintop removal is what many of us have said it is for lo these many years. It is a crime against humanity. Now you can go and look up what crime against humanity means, and you'll find that this fits rather snugly. Pops the little round peg pops into the little round hole perfectly. Mountaintop removal and surface mining of most any form unleashes horrors of disease, disability, and disfigurement upon the people who live near it in a fashion such that if a foreign power did that, we would be at merciless war with that power. The lead sentence from Dan Vergano's USA Today version of the story. Children born in mountaintop mining counties across Appalachia may suffer elevated risks of birth defects, concludes a study. He goes on to lay out the national picture. One in 30, and wow, what a disturbing number this is all by itself. And how many of these things are brought on by environmental toxins and profit-driven processes where people do not matter? We don't know. But nationally, about one in 33 babies suffer a birth defect of some form. And those birth defects are the leading cause of infant death in this country. Okay. If you move around inside, however, inside the counties where mountaintop removal is done, that 1 in 33 risk rises by 26%. By a full quarter. Over babies born in non-MTR regions. MTR is practiced, of course, in Tennessee, eastern Kentucky, the southwest corner of Virginia, and dear God, over most of central and southern West Virginia. It is a sacrifice zone. These are Appalachian killing fields. I'm not carrying on or hooting and hollering or screaming because I want this information to go all the way to the bone for you. To the extent that mountaintop removal coal is used in the electricity production for any given region, and you can learn about it by going to ilovemountains.org and inputting your zip code and finding your connection to mountaintop removal, we are all complicit. We are all complicit in a crime against humanity. But the complicity occurs in levels or rings or greater complicity than others. There is a complicity that attaches with the flipping of the light switch. It is, to say the least, attenuated. But there is a complicity that attaches at a level of moral repugnance to the people who actually do it. From the guy who drives the D9 Caterpillar dozer on a barren, toxic moonscape, to the Don Blankenships of the world and the other coal magnates, and Bill Rainey, the head of the West Virginia Coal Association, and all of these sleazy, slimy politicians that slither serpent-like up against the coal industry, warming their reptilian scales against the insulation of money soaked in the blood of human suffering. Melissa Ahern is a health economist at Washington State University in Spokane. She led the study. And she acknowledged right off the bat the fact that there are a number of risks simply associated with living in coal mining regions. Low birth weight among them. And there are lifestyle, life ways that go with the coal industry and what it has done to the people who live there. Bad health choices. Smoking. Poor dietary choices. Grinding poverty. The study looked at 1,889,071 births in West Virginia, Virginia, Kentucky, and Tennessee between the years 1996 and 2003. During that period, 882 million tons of coal were produced by the mountaintop removal method. Now, I don't know quite how you do the math, but how many birth defects per ton? Of course, that never shows up on the coal company's bottom line because they forget the blood sacrifice that they impose on those who live near it. You know, if we go back in time and look at other cultures that have had blood sacrifices, for instance, if you look at the glyphs of the ancient Maya, you can see carvings on stelae of Mayan kings dragging maguey thorn festooned cords through their tongues in an act of ritual bloodletting. The Mayan kings also did that to their penises, foreskins. As far as we can understand it, they would then let the blood drip onto bark paper, onto which had been written some incantations or prayers. And that paper would then be burnt as an offering to appease the various gods. And we, in our modern age, look at such information, such historical data, and we go, my, oh my, weren't they savages? Look at that, sacrificing human blood in order to appease some imaginary god. Or if you're from the religion area, some heathen demon. Because gods are real, just not theirs. And it's one of those interesting functions of the human mind that we can look at something that happened 1,000 years ago, say in, Copan, or Tulum, or Chichen Itza, or Palenque, and we can say, how silly they were. At the same time, finding ourselves unable to look at our own practices, where industrial processes, and more importantly, profit-driven processes, are externalized upon an innocent public who pay in their own blood, who pay with their own flesh for these titans of industries' blood sacrifices on their own demonic altars dedicated to the concept of profit. Not P-R-O-P-H-E-T, but P-R-O-F-I-T. If you look in the Old Testament, that demon god had a name, and it was Mammon. And I would submit to you that if by some miracle this sort of data survives for 1,000 years, which I find highly unlikely, but if it does, how will those people not look at us and tut, 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 wonder at the ignorance of conducting blood sacrifice for an invisible god called prophet? And unlike those ancient Mesoamericans who generally sacrificed by bloodletting, straight out, and did so with people who were raised in a culture where to go to the sacrifice was to be guaranteed the most glorious of afterlives, unlike them, those, according to this study, those whom we sacrifice do not go willingly and are not dispatched quickly with a flint or obsidian blade. They are dispatched in a long, slow, agonizing, tortured process, laden with torment, in which the suffering goes on past levels that most humans of decent conscience could scarcely contemplate. Coal industry profits are rooted in heart ailments in babies. Coal industry profits are rooted in a baby's being unable to get one good breath. Coal industry profits are rooted in a baby being unable to digest its own mother's milk and later softened foods. Coal industry profits are rooted in teenagers having their gallbladders taken out because they're toxic. Coal industry profits are rooted in 23-year-olds put 6 feet under the earth from kidney cancer because they brushed their teeth every day like Mama told them, only Mama didn't know the water was poison. Because in the name of profit, the coal companies certainly weren't going to smarten up the chumps. Professor Ahern noted rates for any anomaly were approximately 235 per 10,000 live births in the mountaintop removal areas. Out in the rest of the non-mining areas, that rate is 144 per 10,000 live births. I suppose it a pity that we haven't any stone-stepped pyramids up which these little infants are led to be sacrificed. No, they're sacrificed in hospitals. They're sacrificed in the womb. They're sacrificed in the home. And the sacrifice goes on and on and on. And Joe Manchin and Jay Rockefeller and Rand Paul and Mitch McConnell and Jim Webb. Oh, come on, who's the others? Warner? And Bob Corker? And Lamar Alexander? All of them senators. Care not. Even though Joe Manchin, every time there's a West Virginians for Life meeting or dinner or breaking of bread, every time there's one of those, you can count on Joe to be there because Joe is pro-life. Nick Rahal, Shelley Moore Capito, David McKinley, members of the House of Representatives don't give a good old-fashioned goddamn about what their slavish, sleazy, embarrassing, slimy, pathetic support for the coal industry does to babies. Nick Joe Rahal got an award a couple of years ago for being the by God humanitarian, humane society, animal protecting legislator of the year for his efforts to save some effing wild horses while babies are born back in his home district whose innards don't work right because Nick Joe Rahal is a friend of coal. Who are the barbarians? Who are the barbarians? Was it Nine Rabbit on his knees over a piece of bark paper dragging a cord of maguey thorns through his tongue so that he might appease the gods in the name of his people? How barbaric was that compared to a Nick Rahal, a Shelley Moore Capito, a David McKinley, a Jay Rockefeller, a Joe Manchin, a Mitch McConnell, a Rand Paul, a Jim Webb, a Warner, an Alexander, or a Corker who sacrifices the youngest, most innocent of their constituents? Not to appease a god, but to appease a corporation. Who, I ask you, who are the barbarians? What do you say? What do you say to a mama who will spend the rest of her life caring for a child unable to care for itself? What do you say to a father who will prematurely put a beloved son or a darling daughter into the earth? What do you say to those people when you stand, when these politicians stand before their constituents and say, most important thing is that we protect coal because coal means jobs. What does a job mean to a baby decaying in the earth? Margaret Palmer has been on this program. She's at the University of Maryland in College Park. She didn't take part in the study. And she noted something rather important. She said, the findings of this study are strong and significant, if not conservative. That's right, these numbers may be lowballed. There may be more wiggling babies on Cole's blood-soaked altar. Professor Ahern said that what stood out among others more than anything else were circulatory and respiratory effects. Blood flow and breathing. The very essence of life. The breath of life that the Bible, that these friends of Cole thump so well, but read not so much, describes. Margaret Palmer said they may be underestimating the effects. Professor Ahern added, these are costly. These illnesses are costly to the healthcare system and involve a lot of human suffering. I would think public health officials would be interested. This is science. Solid, rock solid science. Peer reviewed. The EPA was asked for comment on this story, the Environmental Protection Agency, and they offered the following. EPA has conducted its own research reviewed by independent scientists showing serious and irreversible damage to clean water in Appalachian communities from mountaintop mining. We've relied on the best available science to require improvements under the law to mining practices that ensure that companies can mine for coal while at the same time reducing impacts to public health and the environment. EPA will review this study along with other similar peer-reviewed research suggesting that surface coal mining is associated with serious human health effects. To be fair, that sounds rather tepid, doesn't it? It isn't. That is groundbreaking. If you will bother to recall that we had 8 years of an outlaw regime headed by a jug-eared, pig-eyed, ignorant little freak named George W. Bush, that EPA could have been handed the bodies of the dead and they would have said, but jobs matter. You know why the EPA issued this statement? The EPA issued this statement because of people like Bo Webb and Maria Gonneau and Judy Bonds and Vernon Haltom and scores of others who have tirelessly beseeched the EPA to take its mission seriously because they are the only ones who have shown even an iota of interest in protecting the defenseless. You know, if you're a coal miner, you've got the Mine Safety and Health Administration that at least protects you a little bit. But if you're nothing but a citizen living in the killing fields of Appalachia, you have virtually no one. Now, to be fair and balanced, the USA Today went off and asked some questions of Luke Popovich of the National Mining Association. He said, we're not certain that authors have made credible correlations between surface mining per se and elevated birth defects. They cut the paychecks this week? Did it clear? We're not certain that there's any correlation at all. He said there needed to be more demographic factors added into the study, and that might remove the elevated birth defects. Demographic factors? Demographic factors? That's sickening. That's sickening. That's like looking at Stalin and saying, yeah, but you're not counting the ones he didn't kill. It is obvious now. The genie's bottle is uncorked. Pandora's box has been flung wide. The lid thereto, open. Sometimes these images just get in the way. It's obvious now. There is an entire region of the United States that is being sacrificed. In God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater, Kurt Vonnegut writes, the people of West Virginia had destroyed their state in a little over 100 years for heat. We must remember that when we talk about destroying a state, we're not just talking about destroying geography, we're talking about destroying the people that make it up. Our good buddy Dennis down in Kentucky sent me the Kentucky coverage from the Lexington Herald Leader earlier today, in which the head of the Kentucky Coal Association was asked for comment, and he said, well, I ain't really had time enough to read the whole thing, but you gotta remember, these scientists, they don't love coal in the first place, so they probably biased against it. Hint, when you cannot address the science, but instead go immediately for the ad hominem attack, these scientists, they don't like coal. We're all supposed to like coal. When you go immediately for the ad hominem attack, as the head of the Kentucky Coal Association did, yeah, you pretty much lost the argument. It's kind of like Godwin's Law. Lynn Goldman is at the Washington, George Washington University School of Public Health. She wasn't part of the study either. She said, I don't see how you can explain away the finding. The method they use is one that has looked at birth defects elsewhere, but this really is the first of its kind to look at mountaintop mining. She says the study data needs to be reproduced. So that means we need more evidence of more children being sacrificed. Why? What? Before we say, yeah, this is real? I got an idea. Instead of waiting for more children to get sick, why don't we end this? Instead of waiting for more children to die, why don't we end this? Or maybe we should reproduce the study's effects. Let's get Ken Rainey and Luke Popovich and the head of the Kentucky Coal Association and Don Blankenship and a host of other, you know, some Wall Street banksters and their political enablers, and let's expose them day in and day out to these toxins and see if they get sick. Lord, how I wish this story was getting as much coverage as the story of that guy from Jackass who turned his Porsche 911 GT3 into a smoking heap of rubble. But a question does attach to all of this. And it is a serious one. Because knowledge, it has been said, is power. But knowledge also confers responsibility. No one may any longer say, well, I had no idea it caused that. Knowledge confers culpability. In the criminal law, it's called mens rea. And they're just swimming in mens rea at the West Virginia Coal Association and the Virginia Coal Association, the Tennessee Coal Association, and the Kentucky Coal Association. They're just up to their necks in mens rea. Criminal intent. And they're up to their necks in it in state houses in every one of those states. And every politician who has ever taken a nickel from a coal company to advance their political career is awash in that mens rea. Going forward, this is active evidence of a crime against humanity. The kind of stuff that you convene tribunals in The Hague over. That day is here. But that knowledge is a double-edged sword. Because we have that knowledge too. And having that knowledge, we must answer the question, what will I do? Because you see, you and I, we, us, the Horn family, and people across this country, liberals, progressives, decent people, we have morals. Where the other side has replaced it with rank, stinking greed. We have morals. And so hearing news of something like this, every moral, every ethical soul that obtains knowledge of this should be aching and wailing right now, as souls are here in the killing fields of Appalachia. And out of that ache, and out of those wails, must come action. Because to do nothing in the face of such knowledge is to adopt and take unto one's breast as one's own the god-awful complicity that already attaches to the monsters of the coal industry. What will you do? What will we do? I don't have that answer except for myself and what I know others in this area will do. They will redouble their efforts. We will continue to go back to the EPA because that seemingly tepid statement is the product of the fact that we've been there before and we continue to remind them that their actions, I told them a couple of weeks ago, I looked at them and we had a meeting. It was after the press conference. And I said, we're talking about a community, a region that is steeped in a deep and abiding faith. We're talking about a people for whom prayer is a very real thing. And I looked every single one of those administrators in the eye. And I said, it is a humbling thing to know, and I want you to know, that tonight, in places all over Appalachia, people of faith will do what they do every night. And they will get on their knees. And they will engage in supplication to the God of their forefathers. And they will lift up prayers for themselves and for their little loved ones. And looking at those members of the EPA, I said, and whether you realize it or not, they will be praying for you. For you with the power to stand in the way of these poisoners, these destroyers. You are agents of salvation, and you should remember that and be humbled by it. And I hope they do. And I hope that you will not be silent with this knowledge. Find a neighbor. Talk to them. Talk to anyone you can talk to. Tell them about the killing fields of Appalachia. Tell them about the babies born with their bodies not right. Do you know a Republican right to lifer? Tell them about the killing fields of Appalachia, where babies are born without a right to life. Tell them. Reject the silence. Reject the isolation. Tell, talk, speak, demand. Write letters to your member of Congress. Write them to your senators. Explain to them that no change will come to Appalachia from within the political structure of Appalachia because coal owns Appalachia. But that just as the nation had to rise up in its righteous fury to end the apartheid that owned the South, so too must the remainder of this nation rise up and say to Joe Manchin, to Nick Rahal, to Jay Rockefeller, to Rand Paul, to Mitch McConnell, to Warner and Webb, to Corker and Alexander, say to them, no more! Because now, we have knowledge. And that knowledge confers responsibility. So that's where we find ourselves as we close the first hour of this Thursday edition of The Horn on a beautiful late June afternoon, where if you didn't know better, you'd swear it was a little slice of paradise until you saw beyond the next ridge and you saw you saw gaping wounds in the earth, the likes of which are, would be sufficient to unleash hell itself, and which do, in fact, unleash hell itself. I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is The Horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, June 23, 2011.
Summer of floods, summer of fires. Today's unlucky town, Minot, North Dakota.
We have a wall of water heading toward the city.
Bad news for U.S. nukes. Sea level rise accelerating. Plus, Al Gore slams Obama on climate change. Fox News slams Al Gore.
All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
Look, Al Gore is looking to protect his legacy, which he has staked on man-made global warming. And we have seen over the last year or so that a lot of this data has been falsified, fraudulent.
Guest on last night who said the planet is now the same temperature it was 15 years ago.
And in fact, we may be cooling. So, you know, he's trying to protect his image.
That is hysterical, Fox News. Or it would be if it was true. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, the Fox News paradigm has been completely blown apart. They can't understand it. That Al Gore is ripping Barack Obama for not doing enough about climate change.
Yes, it does not compute on Fox News when folks on the left don't march in lockstep like folks on the right. Former vice president and current climate advocate Al Gore criticized President Obama in Rolling Stone this week on his lack of action in addressing climate change, saying, quote, he has not defended the science against ongoing dishonest attacks, nor has he provided a presidential venue for the scientific community to bring the reality of the science before the public. But contrary to the media coverage of Gore's essay, it was actually an attack on the entire climate change denial industry and its helpers in the media. As Joan Walsh of Salon.com notes, Gore's piece actually indicts the media, corporations, and both parties for misinforming the public. You can check out the whole article at Rolling Stone's website. We have the links at greennews.bradblog.com.
7,000 words in which Al Gore indicts both the media and Barack Obama as a failure on these issues. Sorry to have confused you, Fox News.
Thursday, the Obama administration announced the release of 30 million barrels of oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. It's part of a coordinated release from strategic reserves all over the world, coordinated by the International Energy Agency. Oil prices dropped $4 immediately to $91 a barrel, but Republicans slammed Obama's move, which helps consumers, as a political maneuver that distracts from more domestic drilling, which helps oil companies.
Weren't they calling on him just a few months back to release oil from the strategic reserves?
Yes.
Okay, I'm confused.
And that's the point. At the same time, a new study shows global sea level rise is accelerating. A new report in the U.S. National Academy of Sciences Journal concludes that the evidence is more precise than it has ever been. Sea levels now rising at a rate faster than they were at any time in the past 2,000 years. And that's just part of the Earth rudely refusing to participate in the political fight over climate change. So far, 2011 is the summer of fires and the summer of floods.
Minot and other communities on the Souris River in my home state are facing a flood of epic proportion. We have a wall of water heading toward the city. This is the headline this morning from that town's major newspaper, and the headline is Projection, Devastation.
That was Senator Kent Conrad, Democrat of North Dakota, speaking on the Senate floor about this week's new epic flood causing $1 billion in damage, this time in Minot, North Dakota, where, again, officials are evacuating tens of thousands of people from historic flooding on the Souris River caused by record spring rains and rapid snowmelt from a record winter. So, in the last 2 months, we've had historic floods on the Mississippi and on the Missouri rivers, on top of record drought and fires in the Southwest, but no mention in the corporate media that any of these extreme events were predicted by climate scientists.
No wonder they're laughing over there on Fox News that none of these things are actually happening.
Speaking of the Missouri River flooding, the levees and flood barriers are holding at those two nuclear power plants located on the river near Omaha, Nebraska. Plant officials and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission say the reactor buildings and units remain dry and electrical grid power remains on.
For now.
Two important investigative reports from the Associated Press this week also slammed the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission. The first report shows that federal regulators with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission have, for decades, weakened safety standards for U.S. nuclear plants, basically concluding that in order to keep the nation's commercial nuclear reactors operating within the rules, the NRC would simply change the rules. The second AP investigation found that three-quarters of U.S. nuclear plants have leaked water contaminated with radioactive tritium from aging underground pipes. That's at 48 out of 65 U.S. nuclear plants.
For more of that good news, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. If you enjoy listening to the Green News Report over our public airwaves, please take this opportunity to call your radio station and thank them for running the Green News Report. There's not a lot of us telling this kind of truth over your public airwaves, so please let your radio station know about it before it's gone. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Thank you for being a friend. I want to thank you. Thank you for being a friend. I want to thank you. Thank you for being a friend.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Nine and a half minutes past the hour just right now. If you're listening to this via podcast, God only knows. But you know what? I'm glad you're there, and I'm glad you... I'm glad you download the program, and I'm glad you participate that way. I want to follow up a little bit. Lines are open, by the way, 877-443-2366, 877-4, head-on. On your nickel, which saves us the nickel, 304-658-3333. There was a little something-something that came out earlier. Apparently, Joe Manchin, Blanche Manchin, and John McCain aren't getting along. Joe is making get out of Afghanistan noises. Bear in mind, of course, he wouldn't be making these noises unless it was politically safe to do so. Joe is the political equivalent of a windsock at an airport. No, Joe said, Joe said that, John Bomber John McCain is hollering that we shouldn't be getting out of Afghanistan. Joe likes him some death and dying and blood and massacre and that kind of thing. Likes it a lot. So Joe showed up, typically, late last night on CNN. Listen to what I have, what passes for a senator in my state.
You know, that was quite an exchange on the Senate floor. Your original speech yesterday elicited an immediate response from Senator McCain, and let's listen to what he had to say.
I feel compelled to respond to the statements by the senator from West Virginia, which characterized the isolationist withdrawal, lack of knowledge of history attitude that seems to be on the rise of America. In case the senator from West Virginia forgot it or never knew it, we withdrew from Afghanistan one time. We withdrew from Afghanistan, and the Taliban came eventually, followed by Al-Qaeda, followed by attacks on the United States of America.
Senator McCain really went after you. He essentially called your statement uninformed on the challenges posed by Al-Qaeda. And the question is this: should domestic fiscal concerns actually outweigh security risks posed by a faster withdrawal?
Joe, let me just say, first of all, John McCain, I'm proud to serve with John McCain. He's a great American. He's made tremendous sacrifices, and his service to his country is unquestioned. With that being said, I don't have the experience he has. But what I do have, like most West Virginians, is a little common sense. And enough is enough. And if 10 years hasn't done it, we've spent $443 billion. We're on track to spend another $485 billion. I don't believe that the purpose or America's purpose was ever to go over and rebuild Afghanistan. You have a country that doesn't have an infrastructure, that doesn't have an economy, and by all accounts has a corrupt government. That's not a country that we could rebuild or should rebuild.
Got that? Afghanistan is a country that does not have an infrastructure, does not have an economy, and has a corrupt government. And he doesn't want to rebuild it. Well, guess what? West Virginia is a state that does not have an infrastructure, does not have an economy, and has a corrupt government, and he's not interested in rebuilding that either. This is sickening. This is just sickening. I want out of Afghanistan. I didn't want to go into Afghanistan in the first place. But make no mistake, Joe Manchin didn't say what he said because it's the right thing to say. Like I said, he is the political equivalent of a windsock at the airport. So, take that with a grain of salt. Meanwhile, I mentioned the EPA. Yeah, there is a relentless assault on the EPA. And it's being led by Republicans and Democrats alike. You know, in the House of Representatives today, a bill was going forward in committee, probably going to come out of committee, get voted on the floor, to make sure that those people that we talk to are rendered powerless to defend the powerless. John Stewart, for instance, mocked Herman Cain, you know, because God, he deserves to be mocked. Herman Cain responded by saying, "John Stewart attacked me because I'm black." No, Herman, John Stewart attacked you because you're an idiot. Idiot knows no race. But never mind that. Check out that. Now remember, Herman Cain is the same guy who says that parts of the Declaration of Independence are actually in the Constitution. Herman Cain's a very patriotic man who is wholly dedicated to a Constitution that exists only in his mind. And Herman Cain is, godfather's pizza. That's what we need, a pizza guy in charge of the country. Oh, what? You want extra pepper? You want extra sidewalks? Oh, that's going to cost more. He's campaigning. And he had a stop today with a group called American Principles Project. And there was a planted question in the audience about how to increase domestic oil production. This is, of course, in Iowa. Don't rely on me to tell you what he said. Listen to what he said.
Hi, first I want to thank you for signing the pledge of Strong America Now on the Lean Six Sigma.
Yes.
Exciting to see that. Second, on the energy program you talked about, you tell me about what you would do specifically as far as all of the different kinds, whether you're talking coal, ethanol, natural gas, and certainly our own oil. Will you work to level the playing field?
Right.
Or what are you going to do?
Several things. Here are the two biggest things. Number one, the EPA is the biggest barrier to more permits, more drilling, more shale oil production. So I'm going to have a regulatory reduction commission that I'm going to appoint that's going to go in and determine how we make things move faster. Some regulations we need.
He's going to have a regulatory commission that's going to go in and find out how we have more birth defects in Appalachia because Appalachian children aren't birth defected enough.
I'm not anti-regulation. I'm just anti-too much regulation. And the people on this commission are going to be people who know something about coal, oil, shale oil.
Anybody going to be on your commission who knows about the causes of birth defects from coal there? Godfather Kane?
Natural gas. And they will be people whose businesses or individuals who have been abused by the EPA. If you've been abused by the EPA, like shale oil, I'm on.
If you've been abused by the EPA. Oh, wait, let's see. Come on. Let me back up just a hair. I want to hear all of this.
Who have been abused by the EPA. If you've been abused by the EPA, like shale oil, I'm going to ask the CEO shale oil, would he like to be on this commission and give me some recommendations?
Clap, you idiots! Clap, you dumbasses! He just told you that he's going to appoint the head of Shell Oil to work on poisoning you. Clap, you idiots!
To the problem.
Clap!
Are the ones who can solve the problem.
I didn't get a harumph out of that guy. Wait, what? Back up.
The people closest to the problem are the ones who can solve the problem.
Right you are, Herm. And there's nobody closer to the problem than us hillbillies getting poisoned by your buddies in the coal industry. And we are solving the problem. We are not going to be silent. And old Herm here's pro-life. How about that? Hermie loves him some fetuses. And it's a sort of a generic fetus love. He doesn't mind if that fetus has flippers, or no arms, or no legs, or about a half a brain, or no brain at all, because that means the child will be born a Republican. Hermie just loves him all them fetuses. He's all equal opportunity, and he loves them even when they're deformed, even when his buddies in the coal industry deform them.
That's one of my guiding principles.
See?
When I wanted to find out at Burger King what was wrong, why we were not as profitable as the other regions, I went and asked the people in the restaurant on the front counter selling pizzas to the customer.
Wait, didn't he say Burger King? I thought it was pizza. Burger King sells pizza? There's a lot of imaginary things in Hermie's brain.
And they said, we're not consistent enough. We had too much stuff going on in the restaurant. Go to the people closer to the problem. The second thing that I would do is I would encourage the use of flex fuel technology in this country.
But we're not going to get away. We're not going to get in the way of those birth defects. No, Hermie, John Stewart didn't criticize you because you're black. John Stewart criticized you because you're an idiot. Yeah, at one point he says shale oil. He's going to, you know, oil shale. Didn't we go through that bunko scam back in the 70s? And then later he says he's going to bring the CEO of Shell Oil onto his commission. That probably means, I'm sure he'll have him some coal thugs on that commission, too. William writing in, Cain, I remember hearing something about his brother Abel. Yeah. Let's see, to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Okay, here's what people can do. Every one of you. You pick up tomorrow, you pick up the phone, and you call your local power company, be it a public utility district or power district, whatever. And you ask them two questions. You say, first of all, you go to Coal River Mountain Watch and find out if you get your electricity from coal.
Actually, that's ilovemountains.org. That's where that widget is. You just put your zip code in.
Okay, yeah. I love mountains. And then you call them up and you say, I understand I get my electricity from coal. I want to know, can I get arranged to get my electricity strictly from wind power? Now they will give you one of two answers. If the answer is yes, you say, yay, sign me up. If the answer is no, then you come up with your second question. Why the hell not?
Well, let me amend that, Susan, if I may. I think the first thing you say to them is, I know for a fact that mountaintop removal coal is in my mix.
Yes, very good. That way they
And I am not willing to tolerate that. And go ahead, whoever the customer service person is answering the phone, give them a little lecture.
Oh, yeah.
Because they'll talk about it around the water cooler, I swear, I promise. And you tell them what is done in Appalachia to get it that coal.
Yeah.
And then tell them it's unnecessary, it needs to be out of the portfolio, it's immoral, unethical, and for those who are believers in some invisible creature, whatever, sinful.
Yeah, because if nothing else, they will end up talking to the person over in the next cubicles. You will not believe the Looney Tunes lady I talked to just a minute ago. She gave me this whole spiel of enough people calling in like that, and it's going to start filtering up to management. Especially when you indicate that you're willing to pay for the privilege of getting wind power generated electricity, and it can be done. Because
well, there is absolutely that, but let me suggest another tack too, if I may, please. And that is this. This is something that happens on the state level, not the national level. It's been introduced in places like North Carolina and Georgia, and with growing momentum. And that is to get hold of your elected representative, whether he's your state senator, your state rep, delegate, what have you. And you tell them you want introduced in the next session of the legislature, you want to see introduced legislation that will ban any entity in that state from importing mountaintop removal coal.
Oh, nice idea. Yes, very good. But I know it's possible to get, you know, exist on nothing but wind power, because that's what I'm on. There's no babies dying because of me.
There have been no wind spills.
Yeah.
No floodwaters are lapping at the base of some wind turbine about to cause some gigantic disaster in the Midwest.
Yeah, it's almost one of them might short out. Big honking deal. A tornado might go through and knock a couple of them down. Big honking deal.
Or a tornado might go through and generate more energy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not going to pollute And I can say with perfect honesty, hey, my hands are clean because my company, my PUD, made this option available. Yes, I have to pay extra for it. I consider it worth it.
Have you made, did you go there? Is there any connection in your zip code?
No.
Beautiful. Well, then again, you're in Oregon, and there's a some civilization going on there.
Hey, the thing is, though, there are other places in Oregon, like Portland, who do get their electricity, some of it, from MTR. And it just varies from zip code to zip code, from company to company, because Portland is Portland General Electric. Different company. I have a local county PUD, and they chose to go green. All blessings upon them. But if nothing else, call up your local PUD or your electric company and start these people will not do diddly unless there's a demand, unless they think they can make money. If you convince them that they can make money, they'll be all over you like flies on a... Well, you know what? I'm trying to keep it clean.
Yeah, I understand, and I appreciate it, too.
Oh, but you get the general idea. Give them that demand. They will be all over you. If you let them know you will pay for it, they will come.
And that is the future. That is the future.
That's the whole deal right there.
But, you know, the people in Congress, remember, as Jim has referred to it from time to time, Washington, D.C. is the Forbidden City. And the Grand Panjandrums and Noble Turks and Exalted Mandarins who exist there, they don't have, we assume that, and it's a dangerous assumption that we make, and I make it too, but we assume that they're as plugged in as we are, but they're not. They actually may have less information than we do. So, you know, finding a copy of this story and making sure that your elected representative is aware of it is incredibly important. Especially if they're in a position to be one of those who resists this relentless, remorseless, shameless, sickening assault on the EPA.
Yeah. And that's another thing you can do. Don't just rest on your laurels with your state representative. You call up, and I agree with your representatives, Bob, you're kind of shackled, but the rest of us aren't. Call up your representative and say, guys, this is a deal breaker. If you help these freaks defund the EPA, don't look to me to vote for you come election time. You're gone. I'll vote.
And you know, there are places where it's important that these elected representatives hear about it. You know, if you're in Louisiana, David Vitter and Mary Landrieu need to hear from you, because they just make assumptions based upon what their oil industry flacks tell them. But they need to hear from you. If you're somewhere, if you're in Nebraska, Ben Nelson needs to hear from you.
Sure.
Because I get the sense that there are a lot of us who have kind of given up on the ones that we assume to be dead letters in the first place. But they've got to be charged with the knowledge of this crime against humanity. And I'm tired of, you know, we've called it a lot of things, Susan, but ultimately, it is a crime against humanity. And it is intolerable, and no country that calls itself civilized can allow it to be perpetrated.
Hey, Bob, you remember the big honking hoorah over the thalidomide babies?
Sure.
And that was only a few thousand worldwide. How many babies in West Virginia?
Well, this study itself concerning 1.8 million. So take the percentage of that, and you get a pretty good idea, I think.
Yeah. Now, everybody, the one thing that you have to remember, first of all, there's two things. First of all, even if you have the misfortune to have the worst right winger in all, of all time, as a representative, doesn't matter. Even they will bow to pressure. It may not seem like it, but if you call them up enough, if you bug them enough.
Yeah, and call it, you know, these people who are pro-life goobers.
Call them on it.
Call them on it. Because these babies are being poisoned in the womb. We're talking about birth defects here.
Yeah.
And we're talking about babies who would be born whole and fully and fully abled.
Yeah, except for one small problem. You're killing them. Now, here's one other thing that people have to understand. And I understand, and I get the feeling a lot of people, they start out all idealistic, and then they run into Washington, D.C. You have to understand that Washington, D.C. is the biggest whorehouse on the planet.
Yeah, but let's not tell them that.
Lays. And we don't got that kind of money. So the only thing we can do is stand outside, take nasty pictures for blackmail purposes. That's the equivalent of what we're doing with our phone calls, our faxes, our letters, and so on, and our votes.
Yeah, you know, for instance, I guess he said he's not going to run again, but Jim Webb of Virginia wrote that book about what it means to be Scots-Irish. And got
well,
all warm and fuzzy about it.
Well, should have known better. He doesn't know diddly about being Scots because he didn't.
Well, just remember, he's an ex-Republican, okay?
Yeah, because if he'd known anything, he would have known what it was like to have Butcher Billy go through the Highlands like our scythe. They killed old men, women, babies in the womb, the whole nine yards. And that's how they're treating Appalachia.
Hear, hear. Susan, thank you very much for the suggestions. I hope people will act on them.
You might, anybody who's Scots anybody who has a representative of Scots ancestry, start calling them Butcher Billy. You'll get the message.
Well, let's get the info into their hands first. Let's take away their ability to claim I was only following orders and I didn't know about it.
Yeah, then you can start calling him Butcher Billy, because that's one nickname anybody who is Scots ancestry responds to negatively. To put it mildly. I still can't believe we've got that name on the Cumberland Pass. My God.
Well, Susan, have a good night, dear.
Give my love to Agnes.
I sure will.
Oh, I do have one question.
Yes?
What did you think of the graphic for prayer meeting?
Oh, it was lovely. I liked that a lot.
I stole that from Diablo 3.
All right. Well, you take care, Susan.
That's the cathedral from Diablo 3. Oh, my word. There's all sorts of zombies inside.
Have a good night.
I've been gaming too much.
Step away from the computer. Step away from the computer.
Yes, I know. Love to everybody. Night-night.
Bye now. News Ninja Susan calling from Oregon. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's John in upstate New York. How are you?
Hey, John. How are you, brother?
Oh, I'm doing good. Been a while since I've checked in on the phone, so I thought I would give you guys a call.
I'm glad you did.
Well, so am I. I know you always say you haven't lost a caller yet, so I'm going to try not to be the first one.
That fading thud said, no, I don't want, no.
Yeah, no. Well, listen, I'm really jazzed to hear that you guys had a great time at Netroots and all that, and that they treated you decently, like decent expected company this year. But the thing I wanted to call in about is, this is probably, people are probably pretty aware of this, but you know, in case you're not, there's big doings here up in Albany. New York looks like poised to be the next state to legalize same-sex marriage.
I hope so.
We are so close.
I noticed, in fact, it was the other day that Maura sent me Maureen Dowd's column excoriating, what's his name, Bishop Dolan. Did you follow any of that?
Yeah, he's the Archbishop of New York, and he's been kind of vocal against it. Not actually in a... He's not one of the craziest out there, you know what I mean? But yeah, I followed that a little bit. He's been, you know, definitely on the wrong side.
Nasty enough.
Sure.
You know,
absolutely.
It's Bart Kopp who says that Maureen Dowd hates everybody, and she really, really unloaded on him something fierce.
Well, I have to check that out. I'm not a huge fan of hers, just because.
Nor I.
But yeah. I guess she's right sometimes, but look, where this stands, and I mean this could come tonight or it could come tomorrow, and if it don't, then it probably ain't gonna happen. The way this has gone last couple of years, it's gone through the assembly, like the lower house, pretty widely, you know, and it always kind of craps out in the Senate. But Cuomo is actually the governor. Has actually really gone in and negotiated and twisted some arms and probably promised a lot of stuff, but he's really been pretty strongly behind this, and they're like one Republican vote away, which sounds really ominous, but apparently there's expectations that they're going to get a couple of folks to fall, because nobody wants to be like the guy who, you know, casts the vote. They want to have some friends with them, you know, for cover, whatever.
Well, I certainly hope that that happens. It's a state of the size of New York. That's the kind of thing that would, well, first of all, Donald Wildman down in Tupelo, Mississippi would probably, you know, I think he's already dribbling his oatmeal, but he'd probably just have the big old coronary that he's been earning for years and just have done with it if he hasn't already. And that would do my heart good. Tony Perkins would put on the Mother Bates dress and just begin rocking furiously at, the family values or whatever they are.
Yeah, and, you know, people think New York and they think, you know, New York City and all, but, you know, I mean, I'm in upstate and, I mean, there's a whole hell of a lot to this state that ain't New York City. You know, I mean, that's definitely the center of gravity politically and economically and everything, but, you know, I think it's really impressive because, I mean, parts of upstate, you know, look like, politics-wise, look like, you know, rural Ohio, rural New Hampshire, rural Pennsylvania.
Well, there's big chunks of upstate New York that are in fact Appalachia.
Oh well, I'm in Appalachia, absolutely. So I mean, I'm right there with you when you talk about how it ain't just the South. You know, it goes all the way up to Canada, man.
And those attitudes prevail because the same kind of folks settled it, and the same attitudes are not that far dissimilar. And if you can break that wall of bigotry in New York, and people who are so-called conservative by nature can, after the span of, oh, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years, realize that, Mr. and Mrs. Jones didn't have to run out and get themselves a divorce because the gays are getting married.
Yeah,
that's the place that sea change is made in this country.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I'm thrilled that, you know, I mean, you know, Iowa passed this, for God's sake, and that's kind of what you're talking about. It's like, wow, and the world didn't end. You know, I mean, it's like, you know, hippie Vermont, New York City, whatever, which I realize is, you know, not always true, but yeah, I mean, this has got to happen in lots of places, but yeah, I mean, you know, people, when you realize that, you know, that attitude in New York prevails, and, you know, we do this because it's the right thing. It's something that's got to happen. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's the biggest state for sure. So it's really something that's got to happen. It's something that, you know, I want to let everybody know. Just, you know, watch the papers or whatever, because if it's going to happen, it's going to happen soon, and word is that it's going to happen. So really, really cool news.
And that's this evening? I mean, that's on the burner?
Yeah, oh, well, they're supposed to be out of session. They've actually stuck around a little while longer to do this because there is apparently, you know, fairly broad support. So, yeah, it's got to be, I mean, it's, you know, they negotiated today, the Republican caucus, and they're talking about, you know, if they think that they've got that one or two or three extra votes, then they're going to have the vote tonight because Cuomo's pushing them. The assembly would come back, pass it with the changes, and there's all kinds of ridiculous crap about how, you know, well, we're going to exempt you know, churches from having to do it, which, I mean, obviously, you know, nobody's going to force the Baptists to marry gay couples if they don't want to.
Well, yeah, and see, that's the kind of disinformation that the right wing is engaged in, John, that's most particularly sickening and odious. Frankly, religious ceremonies have no bearing on actual legal marriage. They are symbolic acts. So, of course, you know, no one would ever presume upon the Catholic Church to ask it to stop being bigoted against gay people. Nobody's ever going to ask the Presbyterians or the Baptists, God knows. You know, you got Southern Baptists in New York even. Nobody's ever going to ask the Southern Baptists to quit spitting on members of God's creation, the gay community. Nobody's going to ask them to do that because we've got a wall of separation between church and state. But the thing is, there's a recognition that has to happen sooner or later in this country, and it's particularly manifested in abortion and in the marriage equity discussion, that the right wing and the religion industry have got to be made to understand that they don't have the right to compel us to adopt their religious feelings. I mean, there's a story out of Florida today, John. Headline, Florida pushes rule allowing Medicaid providers to opt out of family planning services on moral or religious grounds. Well, to the extent that they're taking state money, you know, Medicaid, there's no way that a rational court system would allow that to stand, because that is the imposition of a religious value upon a secular system.
Right.
And that's all any of this is, and somehow or another we've missed the boat because I think we get so upset, rightfully so, at what these the jackassed thugs are doing, that we forget that what they're trying to do, for all their hooting and hollering, to the contrary, what they're trying to do is abrogate the First Amendment. These are all elements of the theocracy that they try to set up. I remember, I'm always going back in my mind to that website that Jude sent us, Reclaim Seven Mountains, where they set out their plan to own the entire cultural structure of the United States and set up a full-blown theocracy.
Right.
Well, these are all elements of that.
Well, they are, and that points to how pernicious this is, because I would say that this is not a misunderstanding of what the law is at all. This is a tactic of theirs. You know, they don't really think that the law would compel them to make Baptists perform same-sex marriages. They're using that for the rubes, for their fundraising.
Right.
You know, it's the same reason that even when Republicans are in power, they don't outlaw abortion, because they fundraise and they get political power out of it. It's not a misunderstanding. It's a tactic, and I don't know how you fight that, you know?
Well, yeah, it's a classic example of don't smarten up the chumps.
Yeah.
I think the only way you counter that is just by being honest with people, by looking them in the eye and saying, listen, I know a gay couple. They don't want to get married in a Baptist church, and they don't want to make the Baptist marry them. They're happy getting married in a church of their choosing. And why do you insist on bringing your religious doctrine to bear on them? Because it's all cloaked within, you know, God says and Paul in Third Philippians and in Leviticus it says suffer not the catamites to live and all of that foolishness. Well, that's fine if that's their doctrine. But we've got, you know, I think we need an honest, you know, just an honest inquiry. Why does the rest of America have to abide by your doctrine?
Well, and not even to mention the sizable chunk of the population that doesn't want to get married for whatever reason. You know, I mean, the gay population that, you know, like whether it's because that's what the straights do or because we don't, you know, we choose not to. We don't need to do that, but they need to have the option, and it needs to be legally protected because it's simply an equal protection thing. That may not be the exact right word, but you know what I'm saying. I mean,
that is exactly the right phrase. It is a question of the interpretation and enforcement of the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment.
Yeah. Well, and so interestingly, also at the same time, this is a real, like, ripple in the force. Obama's in Manhattan tonight talking to an LGBT fundraiser. So there's a really interesting sort of cross-cutting dynamic going on there, because he needs to get right on that issue too, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, you know, there was a lot of there was a debate back at Netroots Nation between an Obama supporter and it was, you know, up on the main stage and everything, an Obama supporter and somebody who was a critic asking when is Don't Ask, Don't Tell going to stop resulting in be fully repealed? When are people going to stop being discharged? Because, you know, a person was discharged under Don't Ask, Don't Tell in April. It's like there's a hurry in the military to get rid of as many as they can before the thing kicks in.
An excellent question.
And and I got a sense, just listening to a number of panels or a number of those speeches in the main hall, there was a lot of cheering going on when people were complaining about what Barack Obama has not done. And I can't imagine that kind of thing does not ripple back to the White House. So he knows, he's got to know that the progressive community is unhappy.
Yeah. And the question is whether he cares and whether that's going to be something he needs to go to and recognize that he needs to shore up by making some right decisions, you know, before the election. I think part of it depends on who he's running against. And I'm not honestly optimistic with the bunch of ass clowns they got, you know, lining up to run against him. I don't think he's going to need to do much to rise.
Well, the sanest one of the bunch, and I'm not, and this is not an endorsement or a suggestion that the guy is sane, but the sanest one of the bunch is John Huntsman. And that
really?
story in and of itself is surprising to me, because remember, John Huntsman was Barack Obama's very own ambassador to China.
So, oh, yeah, I remember that, right.
So now he has turned around and slipped a shiv between his boss's ribs. You know, how he was ever made ambassador to China, whatever possessed Barack Obama to do that, I'll never know. Maybe it's part of that, if I'm just a little bit nicer, maybe they'll finally like me impulse that he seems to have.
Some of that early Team of Rivals crap that he bought into, apparently.
Right, exactly. But that guy probably, I mean, and bear in mind, like I said, this is no statement of Huntsman's sanity, but he's saner than Michelle Bachmann. He's saner than Sarah Palin. He's saner by leagues than Newt Gingrich. Probably saner than Pawlenty. And he and Romney, I mean, this guy was what, governor of Utah, so he's got to be a magic underwear guy.
Yeah, I'm more worried about Pawlenty than anybody, except nobody in America seems to care or know who he is. But I could see him being dangerous, but I don't know.
Well, the thing that he's got going for him so far is that he is incredibly dull.
Well, there's that.
What I mean when I say something like that, John, is that the people that the Republican Party are trying to appeal to are people that live and die by red meat. They want their candidates to stand up and froth at the mouth. They don't care if Michelle Bachmann knows nothing about history as long as she's shrieking. They like it when Sarah Palin, though she is dumber than a bag of hammers, blathers on about the lamestream media. They like that stuff. So being normal and upper Midwest reticent as Pawlenty appears to be is actually a net negative in his case. He's not weird enough.
Well, in a primary, but what about in the general, though? I mean, wouldn't you think that would play a little better in a sort of a broader general election? And that's what I'm thinking about, you know. But there may not be any truth to that. But
no. I think there is. I think there is, John. At that point in time, what's going to happen is you'll lose. The Republican Party always must play to that 20 to 27% of absolute weirdos who hold U.S. citizenship, because if they walk away, if the friends of fetuses walk away, this is how close it is. You know, Albert was talking last night about the coming change, the coming golden age. the Republican Party is within the bat of an eye away from disappearing, just gone. Because if they lose the Friends of the Fetuses, there is no more Republican Party. So they've got to have somebody out there hooting about the fetuses and doing it really shrieky loud.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's why, you know, John McCain had this sort of centrist centrist votes in his record, and the whole reason that Sarah Palin was brought on was because she was crazier than a carton of nuts.
Yeah.
You know, they've always got to have somebody flinging the red meat out. Because those 27%ers, they're jackals. They're carrion. And so I don't know what happened. You know, it's going to be fun to watch this Republican primary process the same way that it's kind of, fun to go to the circus.
Yeah, because eventually, you know, you're going to step in a big old pile of elephant poop, and then it's just, you know.
Right, and exactly, and just like clowns, I don't know about anybody else, but I always find clowns kind of off-putting, and so are these Republican, you know, there's seven of them now, how apropos, there's Grumpy and Stupid and Queasy and Goofy and they're all there.
And, yeah.
I want to give them all a Porsche 911 GT3 and just see what happens. Yeah, because they're all jackasses.
That's a little much, maybe, but no, I got you, man. Way to connect the pop culture to our wide ranging discussion there.
I can't resist. I'm like a machine that way, I guess, John.
That's awesome. Well, listen, I'll get out of the way, but I wanted to say just one time, I'm really, really jazzed about the Prism series starting next week, right?
Yep. Wednesday. Excellent. Starts on Wednesday at 10.
Wednesday 10, and just anyone, I mean, just a plug, if you guys haven't checked that out on Ustream or whatever, it's awesome. Dr. Bill is really cool. Keith is awesome, and it should be just a wonderful series, and I'm going to be tuned in for sure.
And see, Keith really hits his stride once he gets to the middle of the 19th century.
Well, that's my period, too, so I'm really jazzed about that, to tell you. So, yeah.
And they're gonna examine the origins of the Civil War and the sources, and because it didn't just happen overnight, there was bad blood between North and South going back to the Jackson administration.
Well, that's the thing, and anyone who doesn't think that you still hear this Civil War wasn't about slavery, wasn't about race, wasn't about all that. Those are people who don't know anything about the single, largest issue in American politics going back to the Jackson administration. Like you said, territorial expansion and slavery and representation. I mean, that's all it was about. You know, the wars we got into, the territories we accessed, the Indian removal, everything was about that. So I am just really jazzed to hear their spin on the period.
Well, I think it's going to be magnificent. You know, this is the longest one there will have ever been. It's 3 weeks. And it's going to be magnificent.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, I'm jazzed. Well, props to the horn for bringing it, and hey, to the chat room, and I'll get out your way here.
Absolutely. Thank you, John. Good to hear from you. Don't be such a stranger.
Yeah. I sure will.
And welcome back home to New York. I know there's a big difference between that and New Mexico.
Yeah, well, I like them both in their own way. So I'll check in again soon. Okay.
All right. Take care. Bye now.
All right. Bye.
John mentions the Prism series, and thanks go to Dr. Bill. It was Dr. Bill's idea to use the infrastructure of the horn to try to get it out into a larger audience. And so Dr. Bill should be both commended and heartily praised for his recognition that this is how you leverage the future. And if everything works out, we're going to be working with some new technology, and it's going to be really, really cool. So onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Why in the world did they release the oil? I'm sort of like, they've only done this three times since they started this strategic oil reserve.
Well, this I think it was a strategic decision on the Obama administration's part. Thinking, and again, it goes back to what I was talking about with John, where, you know, if we just do one more thing the right-wingers ask for, they'll like us.
Well, you know, the oil companies, you know, it's mixed, you know, they're not too pleased about it. But my thing is that it was a coordinated effort with 27 other countries. And, you know, in response to the fact that Saudi Arabia couldn't convince their cartel to produce more, you know, and I guess I just think it's a sense of panic in the White House, I swear. When I read that this morning, I thought, damn, them people, they hella panicking. You know, it's like, no, Obama, that's not going to help with the jobs problems. You know what I mean? I just think maybe it's dawning on them that, oh, shit, you know.
Well, you know, look at the big price break we've just gotten. We went from $3.99 to $3.66. Well, you know, gosh, let me run out and price the blue Buicks. You know what I mean?
Please. It's still $3.85 here on the West Coast, and so I mean, I'm sorry, that's not getting me filling it up. I'm still $10 in it.
Oh no, yeah. Well, not knowing what you drive. You're $10 and it's my $25 because I've got the big rusty red pickup truck.
Yeah, I just drive a Toyota. Yeah, anyway.
I envy you.
Yeah, well, you know, it's an old car, but all I mean is I used to fill up my car just in the sense, you know, but it is quite expensive, you know, to drop $70 at a time or whatever, you know.
Oh, tell me about it. The tank on the rusty red pickup truck is 37 gallons, Sandra.
Oh, shit, yeah, see, that's what I mean. It's, you know, and that's like a direct, you know, that's just directly off the top of your income. It's no fudging there at all. But anyway, I just thought, oh, my God. But the next thing that was killing me is, according to Andy Stern, that freak, he's saying, yes, Obama will ultimately ease the rules for these companies bringing back $1 trillion so they can have a tax holiday. So he's predicting that Obama's going to, you know, give them that, too.
Dear God.
I'm thinking, are you kidding?
Why?
You know, I just was so.
But
was
why
so,
is why is Andy Stern still out there in the public forum?
Well,
really, trying to be an ass, but I mean, isn't he done?
No, I just thought you would enjoy his name associated with it too, because I was just like, oh no, you know, he's just like some sort of wart, you know, on the union movement at this time. He needs to go away.
Well, and you know, I can't hear his name now without thinking of the torrid romance between him and between him and Jane Hampshire, and then I go, yuck.
Oh, no. You know what? What? What is that?
Oh, yeah, they were an item for a while, and of course she was preening about Netroots Nation, and she hosted a panel called What to Do When the President's Just Not That Into You.
Wait, they were an item. Yuck.
Yeah, right. You understand why my very soul just retches at the.
Oh no! Oh God!
Yeah,
no.
This is the horn caddy moment for the evening.
Well, of course, but that's a bit putrid. Wow. Well, anyway, you know, after his sort of betrayal with the Bull Simpson, you know, I always.
Right.
Look at him fish-eyed. I'm like, oh, no, dude.
Well, but you know, he reminds me of one of those union leaders in, like, a totalitarian dictatorship.
Right. Or one that would be in China right now. Yes, exactly.
Because he's completely complicit with management?
Yeah, it's like Mussolini. It's the kind of management union that you see in fascist Italy.
And by the way, just while we're asking, how is that whole break-up the AFL-CIO thing working out for him?
Oh.
Remember, he broke up the AFL-CIO and took, like, the Teamsters and the Carpenters and the SEIU and a couple of others, maybe the United Food and Commercial Workers, took them out and formed this really stupidly named organization called the Change to Win Coalition, which has apparently gone every bit of nowhere.
Yeah, no, listen, he definitely is sort of... not a very helpful character in the bigger picture of American organized labor. My God. And the fact that he's now, you know, residing in the bosom of these people in the White House is kind of like,
Well, the idea that the White House thinks that he's their kind of labor guy.
Well, that's what that tells you about them, you know. I just think that it fits hand in glove with what they're selling. But the sort of the idea that Apple and all these other corporations are about to get another windfall for nothing. What do they have to do? The last time it happened, they took the money and they cut jobs. Now they're trying to say, well, they won't be allowed to do that this time. Who's going to stop them?
To the best of my knowledge, no one.
That's what I'm saying. You know, we're talking now as these huge corporations are almost on level footing as these nation states now. But anyway.
Well, I don't know if it's almost anymore, Sandra. They have something that is approaching sovereignty, do they not?
Yeah, it's just that, you know, when I look at NATO becoming kind of this global military for them, I swear, I know it's a bit simplistic, but, you know, what else is NATO now that they're sort of punishing countries way outside their responsibility, if you know what I'm saying?
Well, you say simplistic. Here, let me take it to an even simpler level. Didn't the need for NATO kind of go away with the collapse of the Soviet Union?
Bingo!
I mean, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization was formed specifically for the purpose of countering the Soviet threat in Europe.
Well, yeah, and to police Europe itself. I mean, we didn't want Germany to rearm and blah 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 blah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was the whole idea, along with the planning for the European Union too. You know, all of that was sort of to contain Germany. And you know what I say about that? Germany is about as contained as nothing. Look at it.
Well, yeah, there you go, because this is not the first evening when I have reflected on the fact that what they could not do under force of arms, they've done with the force of money.
Listen, it's amazing when you think about Germany. I did this this paper on just how involved they were in the sort of second leg of deepening and expansion of the European Union, where they brought in the Eastern European countries. Dear Lord, they did that single-handedly for a new market. They're like, "Hello, we don't need tanks, bitches. Come in now." France couldn't stop them. Nobody could stop them, and they added 10 countries to the place. So no. Germany is just fine, thank you very much. And you notice that Germany isn't all up in this Libya. They're like, oh, no, we got to sell. Excuse you, have fun.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, you can make the argument that Germany learned from its mistakes. They had to make it twice, but the third time's the charm. And they do so many things right.
Well,
you know, they protect their markets, they protect their workers. I mean, they've got a permanent, you know, I guess it's permanent, 8% unemployment, but the 8% who are unemployed are not living on the streets in abject misery and poverty.
Well, and they also have, I mean, don't get it, I mean, definitely the model they had in the 90s has definitely changed, because they have a huge population of low-wage workers in Germany. That has really expanded. So there is some friction there. And this is why, if anything is going to save, keep the euro going, it's kind of that. Because what is going to happen if the union collapses? Germany is not going to be able to, you know, maintain the power base, which might explain part of the sort of, I mean, because they are like spinning to keep Greece. They will do whatever. I was reading today, and it's just, you know, it's just over the top. It's like, what is the problem? Then you start looking at the bigger picture with, like I said yesterday, the credit default swaps and the power of Germany and, I guess, France. You know, it's just, they just can't let it go. But anyway, I guess enough with that. I was wondering if you read the Michelle Bachmann piece.
Oh, my God.
Wasn't that? I mean, I couldn't stop reading it. At first, I thought, "Oh my God, it's too long." Then I was like, "Are you kidding me with this?"
And no, it's page after page after page.
I had no idea.
It's one of those articles, and Maura wrote to me about it too. She said,
yes.
"She said my voice isn't good this evening, but I want to recommend the article written by Matt Taibbi It paints a picture of a true believer who is batshit crazy. The article's filled with all sorts of little goodies, Morris says. And that's the thing, you know, I wanted to go get the popcorn. You know, munch and turn.
I couldn't believe it. It was just so over the top. And it's just like, what was killing me more? I mean, the stories about her itself, but the background stories of the people saying, basically say, oh my God, never know what was coming. You know, the sort of defeated people, their little commentaries was hilarious.
And I mean, I heard stories up in Minnesota about like when she was a state senator or a member of the legislature up there. And, for instance, there was some sort of an event where she spoke and she was out there in her, you know, her prim, proper, fundamentalist Baptist lady thing going on.
Mm.
And I mean, I love this because it was, God, it's just so perfect. Apparently after that, there was some sort of, I may not even have it right. But there was some sort of gay pride event or something.
Well, yeah, that's the one. You mean where she was hiding in the bushes?
Where she was hiding in the bushes, changing clothes, and she comes out in jeans and a T-shirt.
Right, and she accuses some dykes of, like, kind of threatening her, like, together. And I'm thinking, yeah, I guess you were. You know, she's, ugh. That story was funny, though, the gay thing. I mean, it's just so bizarre. But I like how he made a point of reminding the readers as you're laughing, falling over, don't laugh too much. And I have to agree because she comported herself pretty well in that debate.
Well, once she figured out where the camera was, you know.
No, she looked crazy. I mean, I think she is just sort of over the top. And I also included that little video for you. Did you look at that?
Jesus. God. No, I wrote back and said, you know, is that real? I mean, is that really?
No, that video is. No, I don't mean the Han. We can get that, but I was just thinking about that Bachman one when she meets Bush.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I'm sorry. I'm still stuck on the other one, the campaign ad from L.A.
Yeah, the Han one is just like, are you kidding? Yeah. I don't really know what constituency that is supposed to appeal to, except for the sort of scared, you know, strange white people who actually believe that most black people behave that way, and that's how they should be portrayed. I don't really know.
Well, I mean, have we got a second? Can we run the audio of this ad for folks?
Yeah, I don't know if it will convey, but yeah, go ahead.
Well, I mean, we'll do the setup. You know, this is just this. One of these days, you know, we'll be able to just put the video out there and everything. But no, the setup is that this is an ad. This is an opposition ad. Against a liberal, and she's running in L.A., right?
Yeah, I think she's a daughter of, she's a member of the Han family that's, you know, well-connected politically in L.A.
Yeah, and so, you know, no, I don't think you've got to have the video to comprehend the concept of give us your cash, bitches. And of course, the singers are African American, and it's all gangsta'd up and guns and
butt,
yeah, guns and butt. Yeah, and they've got a woman with short blonde hair like her, with her back to the camera, hanging onto a stripper pole, sticking her butt out, getting her white butt slapped by the gang, you know, by the gangster boys from the hood. Oh Jesus. I have not. I mean, there's a lot of sleazy race baiting garbage out there, but I mean, this one may take the cake. So let's roll the audio just to let folks enjoy it.
In an insane effort to reduce gang violence, Janice Hahn hired hardcore gang members with taxpayer money to be gang intervention specialists. She even helped them get out of jail so they could rape and kill again.
Wait, rape and kill again, Sandra? Is there some breaking story out there in Southern California that one of these people raped and killed?
Well, that's the thing. I don't. You know, that's what I mean. The sort of it's just dog whistle. I don't know what the hell it is.
Right, no, this is straight up Mel Brooks. Where the white women at? You know.
I missed the sort of like the whole rape. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, so we'll roll on with this.
Daddy Han, daddy working with Daddy Han. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
different kind of person to be able to speak the language.
Congress has enough gangsters. Janice Hahn, bad for L.A., bad for America. Let's keep her out of Congress, homies. Donate now.
Wow.
Yeah, no, and
I'm still not okay. I mean, that's like the fifth time I've seen that.
Oh, right. No, it's a PAC, some sort of PAC group or some one of those groups that's getting funded by the sort of mystery corporate money that's free.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some Coke dollars in there, some crow money.
Yeah, but anyway, and it's just like, it's just so over the top and ridiculous, but then again, I guess that's what they relate to.
The organization is Turn Right America.
Right. I mean, it is, you know, they're producing that sort of shit now. That's what's coming.
It's probably the wrong idiom, but it's completely out of the closet now. This is the kind of stuff that the right-wingers used to have to talk about in hushed tones, in rooms behind closed doors, and they're just out in the street with it now.
Well, exactly. I mean, listen, I was stunned when I saw the Acorn thing. I thought, oh, no, these white people have lost their damn minds.
Well,
and it's just gone off the deep end. You know?
Yeah, and I want to reiterate, because I didn't have that much time to deal with it, and I don't want to spend more than 15 or 30 seconds on it, but anybody who has watched the Wiener transcripts of the tweets, that was a setup. That was a Breitbart setup, and nobody is out there saying it. The guy, he did idiotic things, yes, but, you know, by the same token, how does that compare with the idiotic things? I mean, you know, Wiener didn't get laid. But David Vitter, repeatedly, for money, did.
Oh, no. It's beyond a joke. I mean, at this point, I would think that the media, they just need to have a shower. I just am so disgusted by their whole sort of, the way they glommed onto that. At the expense of Nebraska? Can we move to that? Hello?
Yeah, right. Because, you know, who needs to know about that?
I mean, yeah, no, I don't, you know, I don't know. I don't know what's going on with the Nebraska thing, but that don't look right. It can't be underwater. I mean, what's happening? Have you seen any more pictures?
I saw another one today over at Brad Blog. And there's no way to make it right.
Oh, God. Well, no, listen, I just don't understand. Where did all the water come from? It just seems to be like a huge part of the country, like it was in Pakistan. I know it's not that bad yet, but you know what I mean? It's sort of like when you have like huge entities like that being overwhelmed by water, wow. Is there a big runoff from the Rockies? I mean, what's happening?
Well, the snow melt is more than expected, and I guess the upper reaches of the Missouri River have received more rain in the last couple of weeks than in a lot of recent history. And for God's sakes, let's not note that this, you know, of course, it has nothing to do with the global climate catastrophe brought on by Shell, BP, Massey Energy, Alpha Natural Resources, Peabody, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But it is. This is stuff, Sandra, that the scientists with the modeling 10 years, 15 years ago said, you know what? Here's what you expect. Greater extremes of climatic activity. You know, because just like the right wing, you know how it is with Radio Rwanda. If it snows in D.C. in January, they'll say it's cold in January. Where's the global warming?
Right.
Because they don't know the difference between climate and weather. Well, this, what's going on right now in the upper reaches of the Missouri River Basin is climate. It's not weather. Because this isn't supposed to be happening right now.
No, because let's be honest, as inept as, you know, some planners are, no one is building something expecting it to be totally submerged operating a nuclear plant. You see what I mean? So
Well, what is it? I mean, what is this story about Fukui Prefecture in Japan that you sent me today?
Oh,
the Manjo fast breeder reactor. Yeah. And I mean, it's a story from the New York Times. And I can't make horse sense out of what it means because it says, let me see if I can find it. The Manju, yeah, you highlighted it.
Yeah.
The Manju prototype fast breeder reactor, a long troubled national project. And remember, this is the New York Times where, you know, they get snitty over whether you call somebody whether you call him Mr. Loaf or Meat Loaf. Has been in a precarious state of shutdown since a 3.3-ton device crashed into the reactor's inner vessel, cutting off access to the plutonium and uranium fuel rods at its core. What, Sandra?
Yeah, and
what is a 3.3-ton device in the New York Times?
I have no idea, and that's why I have to put the hello, what the hell. What
I mean, is that, you know, is that Moth, is that Mothra's mighty tail? I don't know. Godzilla's foot? A 3.3-ton device?
Device. No, just think about that. That's like some damn, that's like maybe your truck crashing into something.
That's 6,600 pounds of something that the New York Times doesn't quite know what it is.
No, and apparently the people who try to remove it don't really know what it is because it's been deformed since the little contact. You understand what I mean? It's been deformed, Bob, since it collided with the uranium.
With the plutonium.
Because
remember, this is the other thing that struck me. You know, this is a breeder reactor, and for those who have forgotten their nuclear nightmares of the 70s and 80s. The breeder reactor is an attempt to create nuclear, create radioactive shit from other stuff so that you don't have to dig any more fuel out.
Well, did you notice how close it is to Kyoto, the city?
Yeah, well, you can throw a rock and hit Kyoto, and it's kind of reminiscent of the story out of Nebraska where. What fort? The nuclear plant in Omaha is 18 miles.
Cooper?
Yeah, Fort Cooper is 18 miles from Omaha.
Right. No, I know. That's what I'm saying. It's like downtown to the mall. There it is. Boom. You know. Listen. I understand that maybe because, you know, I'm kind of focused. I'm just looking at these nuclear things, you know, sort of taking over my mind, I know. But this thing in the New York Times, I was like, what? And then I did a little bit of research. This shit has been troubled for years, this particular plant. And to so cavalierly talk about some tonnage falling on top of it, they can't remove it. They're working on it today. Oh, it should take 8 hours. But who knows if it was removed? And they're worried about, well, what are they going to find? And when I see plutonium, I worry too. And what person is doing this? Who's doing it? Godzilla?
Right. Sorry. And it's built, you know, and it's built on top of an earthquake fault, naturally, because that appears to be where they built all the reactors in Japan. Oh, we got a fault here. Let's put a reactor on top of it.
Right, right. Or below sea level. Yeah, exactly. All so bad.
And you know, rolling back to the Omaha story, and Fort Calhoun. It's Fort Calhoun, and the Cooper Nuclear Station.
Right.
And I guess you just can't tear the for-profit media away from the car. You know, the Ryan car wreck or the aftershocks of Wiener or whatever is the stupid story du jour.
Yeah.
You can't tear the for-profit media, Sandra, away long enough for them to note that, and you know, here's another great moment in Orwellian language. The Cooper Nuclear Station in Nebraska is under quote, unusual event declaration because of nearby floodwaters. It's an unusual event. It's not a potential nuclear disaster. It's an unusual event. You know, that's that, you know, when I'm thinking about unusual events, I'm thinking about when I go out to the garden and I plant Brussels sprout seeds and a cucumber comes up.
Right.
That's an unusual event.
You're not talking about an event horizon, which is what it's looking like in this country or in this world, you know?
And as I noted in our correspondence, CNN, of course, buried the lead.
Yeah, no, that was really...
Because you got to go way the hell down in the story to find the fact that most of the plant is under 2 feet of water.
And that's anybody can tell you that those two things don't mix along with sandbags. Oh, I'm reassured they're using sandbags.
Yeah, well, we've got the sandbags in. Nothing to worry about, America.
Right. No, it's incredible. It's like, are you kidding me? And the only other thing, as far as the nuclear thing I need to mention, is that number 4, we're back at Fukushima, is only 8 degrees below boiling point. Hello. That, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And the problem with if it's that close to boiling, that means there's some moisture and steam happening. And any electric, you know, might misfire. You know, so what's happening there? You know, what are they doing to cool it down?
Yeah, and let's come back to Omaha for a minute. An 8 foot tall, because this is going to work, an 8 foot tall water filled berm. That's water-filled, 16 feet wide at its base, surrounds the reactor containment structure and auxiliary buildings, the NRC says. Because we can believe them.
But, yeah. Ugh.
And the plant, I mean, sleep tight tonight, America. The plant has brought in an additional emergency diesel generator, water pumps, sandbags, and firefighting equipment as well. And they've got lots of additional inspectors at Fort Calhoun. And
what, do they have 60 extra people sleeping around the clock? Which I know is one of those ones.
Yeah, they're sleeping. They've got extra staff in. They're sleeping on cots. Can you imagine being married to one of the people that's in there?
Well, of course, there's nothing's going on. It's all safe, even though you know there's no leaks. We're supposed to believe all this, but in the meanwhile, a helicopter made an emergency landing near Fort Calhoun while checking if floodwaters had weakened power transmission lines. So that happened today. Now, apparently the pilot and whoever else is okay, but you know that story it just don't sound right.
And it's not being covered.
It's not being covered. And listen, I'll let you go, but I have to leave you with this one more thing. Lady Gaga promises to promote Japan as a safe destination. I'm going to run around Tokyo and enjoy the beautiful city and kiss all the beautiful little monsters.
You know, I was beginning to have real hopes for her.
Well,
at least I've still got Katy Perry. Because she said today, Sandra, and because we're not limited by the FCC, we can use actual quotes, and this is a beautiful moment. She said, it is fucking crazy that the United States does not have universal health care.
Oh, well, she's a firecracker. Fantastic.
Well, remember, she is, she's like me. She's a recovering fundamentalist. Well, I mean, she's like me in the sort of loosest sense of the use of that phrase. I mean, I'm not a multi-billionaire rocker or pop star. But
where is she from?
She's from California.
American. I didn't know.
Yeah, she's from Southern California, was raised by, you know, tambourine-shaking people who sit in the congregation with both hands in the air, swaying back and forth, singing Jesus, Jesus.
Well, maybe that's why she, can sort of keep it together with her songs. I like a couple of her tracks, at least the girls do, anyway.
Yeah, well, I find some of that a lot more listenable than Gaga, but, you know, that's just me.
Yeah, no, I like some of her. Anyway, yeah, so I have to put her on a short list. That's pretty good.
Katy Perry, if you're listening, you're on Sandra's short list, and it takes a hell of a lot to get on that.
No, that's great. Well, listen, don't get me wrong. I'm not, I just, the Lady Gaga thing is just sort of like, it's just sort of a bit, it just stretches disbelief because at the meantime, they're finding all these hot spots all over that country, and it's just...
Yeah, just kind of blinking. I read that.
It's just depressing. It's like, huh? So,
but But even in that, the language is tormented, Sandra. They're hot spots. No, they're radioactive spots.
Oh, right. Spent fuel rods and all that.
Yeah, because it's spent.
Anyway, I mean, listen, maybe I should just take a break from the computer and everything, because it's all just really doing my head in, and I don't feel like I'm, you know, having full connection with reality here looking out.
No, sometimes the ringside seats at the advent of the apocalypse can make your butt a little sore.
Well, and it's on a serious note, though, I just wanted to get talked down from this Nebraska bit, but I guess not. I guess is it stabilizing or looks to be getting worse? This is the thing.
When there's a virtual news blackout on it.
Well, that's the problem, I think. It's just that, once again, we're not being told, so it makes you even more sort of concerned.
And when the news blackout is lifted long enough to give you a little dose of, there's nothing to worry about here. Everything's fine. It's all being taken care of. Nothing to see here. Move along. Aren't you worried about somebody's sex scandal? Please, come on. Wasn't there a car wreck?
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's really too much. And listen, I don't know if you did. You happen to see that poor woman who was talking about how she was sterilized? You know about this story?
Yes.
Oh my God. Anyway, I can't even start on in on that one because I was so horrified at it.
Well, that's just one of those reminders. Look, you know, we think we're in the 21st century. You know, we've got cell phones that can make pancakes for us. But then you get a story like that, and you go, oh shit, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, and the story about I guess the numbers have come out now. And the for-profit prison industry is really, no, not kidding, actively engaged in lobbying to put more Americans in prison. Because, you know, the prison...
What story is this? What's the latest? I missed this.
Oh, this is... I saw it in show prep. Think Progress has it. Private prisons spend millions on lobbying to put more people in jail. The Justice Policy Institute released a report chronicling the political strategies of private prison companies, quote, working to make money through harsh policies and longer sentences.
Yeah, I mean it's just sort of a duh moment, though, when you know, if you have any common sense about incentives, you know, all you have to do is take a couple of econ courses to figure out about incentivizing whatever.
We like statistics and we like numbers. This one just crawled all over me like I just walked through a spider web. Since 1997, Sandra, government spending on corrections has gone up 72%. It was $74 billion in 2007. Whoa.
It really is just stunning. But it's really scary because there's no way you can have 2.3 million people locked up. Don't try to correlate it with crime when you have this privatization mania.
No. I mean, okay, here's another one of those numbers. You've got private, federal, and state facilities, right? The for-profit prisons. Private, federal, for-profit prison populations have increased by 120%. State for-profit prison complexes populations have increased by 33%.
I mean, but it's just this whole sort of neoliberal, it's just a way of completely transferring tax dollars to them. That's...
It was Monday when we were driving home, and I was listening to the radio. You know, Ferg says, oh, Dad, please, can't we listen to some music? Does it always have to be news talk, Dad? Please? I'm like, sorry, son. I'm behind the wheel. I put on the Jimmy Buffett channel on Sirius. I got griped at about that. Endless. But anyway, so...
out the window.
I heard this story being discussed about comments by that loathsome, noxious, filthy freak, Neil Bortz, responding to the crime numbers that had come out that day. And essentially what he said, Sandra, and it was one of those where Agnes gives me the fish eye. You know, keep the, no, keep it on the road, Bob. Because I'm going, don't! Yeah. No, he said, well, to distill it, he said, basically, the crime problem in America is caused because black people are more prone to be criminals.
Right, well, that's always the response to the horrific incarceration numbers. They can't say anything else to justify it, so it has to be because black people are innately have a lot of criminality, the same way as that guy from L.A. said that there's something wrong with black people's neck, which is why they would always die when the police choked them. Remember that story?
Oh, God. I was trying not to, but thanks for bringing that one back.
Same thing, okay? And no, it's not because police, police the ghetto in the form of containing them, thus they will arrest more people. Oh, no, it can't be that. You know, I mean, that's just gibberish.
Well, yeah, because you go back to this other statistic. I mentioned that 120 and 33% numbers in private prisons.
Yeah.
Well, over the same period of time, the prison population increase, and this is a horrifying enough number as it is, the prison population increase generally has only been 16%. But within the scope of that, because of the relentless lobbying of the for-profit incarceration industry, within that 16% increase, the for-profit prison populations are shooting through the roof. And you know, let's be clear about this. It is not cheaper by any metric to send a person to a for-profit prison.
No,
because there are shareholders who have to be serviced.
Yeah, they found that, you know, every study has shown that it's really inefficient to privatize so many of these services that they have. But, you know, like I say, maybe like I wrote to you in that email, maybe the sort of coming Minsky creative destruction may render the whole system
moot.
I know it's horrible to even be thinking that way, but you know, I was really surprised to find that Dean Baker article. He was using it as a way for Obama to come to his senses and just reject the whole negotiation out of hand. But I was looking at it as if, oh damn, you know, we're not the only ones talking about life goes on. I just thought that whole thing with Albert, which I thought was great, what he was saying, I thought, yeah, that's true. Tomorrow will come.
Yeah, the sun, you know, the sun will come up.
But the prison thing, I didn't know. I have to look that up. I didn't know that those numbers, because it's scary, because what they're doing is now they're turning them more into warehousing of the poor, which is what I think they are generally speaking.
Well, at what point in time do they not become... See, I used to say this about Guantanamo. At what point in time, you know, how is Guantanamo not a concentration camp? Is it not a concentration camp simply because an American flag is flying over it?
Well, I would think that what's his, oh God, the guy who wrote about the Soviet gulag?
Alexander Solzhenitsyn?
Yeah, I think he would concur.
Well, you know, maybe it's time that that some publisher re-released the Gulag Archipelago into general. Maybe it's time to put that on the Kindle.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe I'll have a look at that this summer too. Because, but the thing is,
Sandra's beach reading list.
It is not nice. But you know what else? Speaking of reading lists, I have this Europe Reshaped by Granville. It's 1848 to 1878.
Oh, wow.
I'm starting to get stuck into that because that's about the sort of revolution that happened in Europe. That's kind of akin to what's going on in the Middle East now. Maybe Europe, too, again. You know,
it's yeah.
A rolling kind of disjointed revolution that went on.
Well,
anyway.
You know, you might very much enjoy the Prism Lectures if you've got time because, you know, we're going to be doing Dr. Bill, Keith Lilly, and other noted experts and scholars are going to be addressing a big chunk of that same period of American history. And you might find that a lively discussion. By the way, got an email in from David in Tennessee, Sandra. He said, I was driving when that North Carolina woman told the sterilization story. He says, I pulled over to get myself back together. No, really, I pulled over.
Yeah, no, that was, I was like, oh, wow. Yeah, that really is disturbing. Anyway, listen, I've been on too damn long. Oh, my God. I'll let you go.
All right.
So have a good evening.
Sandra, you take care.
All right, bye.
Bye now. Sandra calling from California. I read it, and I don't have it because, well, by the way, big, big, big thank yous to Lottie from the chat room. He helped me today get the production machine back up and running. The sleazy stuff that's out there on the Internet, you don't even have to go to somewhere nasty anymore. I was reading a news story from the UK Daily Mail or whatever when my computer got infected, and Lottie kindly helped me pull it all back together. I'm trying to find the sterilization story simply because, well, it deserves more attention than just the mention that Sandra and I have given it. 77-year-old Willis Lynch told the task force Wednesday that he was sterilized at age 14 and has always regretted not being able to have children. It goes on and on. State-sponsored sterilization program in North Carolina. Victims and their family members are urging a governor-appointed task force to recommend financial compensation for their suffering. The program was one of the longest-running and most active in the United States. Maybe we'll dig into this. Maybe we'll dig into this a little bit, perhaps, tomorrow night. Let's keep things rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
I know a little bit about that North Carolina thing, but I won't go into it if you're going to do it tomorrow. I wanted to say a couple of things about Governor Skinhead.
Yes.
We got two laws that are in effect now. State workers, they're having to pay 10% for their pensions. I don't know whether it's either that or no pension at all. He did say something like that.
Nice. Hello? People, these. Yeah, well, I'm right here.
That's a lot of money.
Yes, it is.
Know, to have to, that's kind of like tithing to the church.
And I think you've probably got it. I mean, if Rick Scott has his way, you will take your pension on faith, by golly.
Yeah. Well, somebody asked him, said, why didn't you give the other people a chance, give them a chance? Because he hit them by surprise, you know. And he said, well, that's just the best way. You know, real flippant. And then the other one is the drug test for people who apply for welfare.
Oh, yes. New development.
That's the law today.
And oh, that went into effect today. Lovely.
Yeah. And they said it was $30 a person, and if you passed it, you got your money back. Of course, it doesn't say...
When?
You know, it doesn't say how many people in the family have to be tested either. But what I wanted to know was, it said they didn't want anybody who was taking drugs to get welfare, any kind of welfare. I'm on another.
Yeah, because you know what? You know what I think's better for people taking drugs, Juanita?
Them starve?
No. I think it's better if they turn to a life of crime and maybe knocking over people for drug money. That's a great idea. But wait, you know, actually this ties into what Sandra and I were talking about. So you can't get public assistance if you've got a little bit of THC in your system.
Right.
So, therefore, you're going to wind up screwing up somehow. And guess what the state of Florida is going to do? Well, they're going to put you in one of their for-profit private prisons.
Oh, yeah.
See how it works? I mean, that's the moving hand of the free market, Juanita.
Yeah. And the thing is that, what about these people that have children? Is the children, I mean, forget, and then...
Well, they can go into foster care. Or maybe they can go to, well, they can go to foster care, and when they go into foster care, Juanita, they will go to a faith-based foster care, and by faith-based, we mean right-wing religion industry.
Moshe Bauman, or whatever.
And, and Bachman, and what'll happen then is that Rick Scott, I'm sure, has a corporation that he's already deeded over to his wife that runs, oh, I don't know, Christian foster care.
Well,
I hate myself for thinking this way, by the way, but I've been taught to.
I know, but you know what, Bob? I remember the Gore Bush fiasco, and I saw everything there was about it on TV. And it was kind of like a little voice saying to me, write this all down, keep a journal. And at that time, this was my mindset, I thought, but that might not be very Christian of me. And I believe it was the Lord. And I could have had a book about it because I saw everything that went on. But anyway, see, we think we're doing something right. We've been taught, just like you say, and you feel bad about that. But they've just proven themselves over and over what dirtbags they all are.
You know, Juanita, I don't think I have ever heard you use the word dirtbag before. That's where they've pushed you to.
Well, it just revived old stuff that's supposed to die away, right? No, but, you know, the thing about my mindset about that wouldn't be very Christian of me, you know. Well, what do we have as what Christianity is? We're so brainwashed about what Christianity is supposed to be till we don't really know what it is.
Nor are they supposed to. You know, I was reminded by something that I got in email during the show from Maria Gano, who is a tireless advocate on for Appalachian human rights. It's a stunning little essay, and may very well be worth noting. Well, just one of the things that it reminds me, you know, we call probably the single most important collection of the sayings of Jesus occur in what we call the Sermon on the Mount.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think we give the location short shrift. But, you know, it says that Jesus climbed up on the mountain to deliver that sermon.
Mm-hmm.
And the stuff that's contained in there is utterly lost on most of these practitioners of right-wing religion.
Oh, yeah.
Whether it's prosperity gospel,
yeah.
What have you. But, you know, let's remember, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be filled. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for their, you know, the humble, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's nothing, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing in there about blessed are the really, really wealthy people, for God likes them better. But that's what the prosperity gospel is. That's what all these Joel Osteens and Joyce What's-Her-Names and Creflo Dollar and all of these huckster freaks are preaching.
All three this week at switching channels.
Yuck.
Creflo Dollar and the other two.
Joyce Myers and...
Yeah. And what's his face?
Creflo Dollar. Joel Osteen.
Osteen, yep. Yeah.
Yuck.
But, yeah. Did you see that big church guy?
Oh. It just makes me nuts. Just,
and he makes his money off of book sales. Only he writes for his. What do you think about Gore?
You know, as I listened, you know, I was listening to the Green News there at the top of the 7 o'clock hour. And, you know, I guess it's because I'm a curmudgeon, Juanita. But I heard that and I thought, you know, Al Gore, for all the good he's done and all the right intentions that he has, Al Gore needs to get right with some stuff, too. Because the last I checked, he still endorses some clean coal technology.
Really?
Like carbon capture and storage.
I don't know.
And you know what? You got to get that. You know, it's. I don't know.
Let's check that out.
It's like getting bed bugs. You know, you got to get rid of it.
Like nuclear, I know that.
You know, you got to get rid of all the bed bugs, or you're going to keep having bed bug problems.
Well, that's the worst kind of bed bug, isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't that what happened to London back when they, I guess they finally had the fire or something, and London was so polluted till it was like
incendiary?
Smoke. Found a Victorian times?
I'm not sure about that. I mean, the Great Fire of London was before then, but...
Well, I believe this was it. Victoria and the... That's what they used was coal. They used so much coal till the air was thick. It wasn't just smoky. It was smoke-filled, you know. Just completely smoke-filled.
Oh, yeah. To the point that there's an anecdote about Charles Darwin, I think, beginning to get the first inkling of his ideas of evolution from the fact that after they had lived in coal smoke filth long enough, white pigeons began to be born black, you know, and speckled so that they could better blend in with their surroundings. I guess the anecdote goes that he sort of clued in on the idea of natural selection like that.
Well,
I may have that completely wrong, and I'll get email if I do.
Was the fire of London, was that caused by illegal aliens?
You know, I don't think so, but I'm sure that they did get around to blaming the Jews. You know, that was, see, but this is, whether it's going on in South Carolina, Alabama, Georgia, Arizona, Florida, all this illegal alien business. I mean, it's so bad, I forget what state it is. Maybe it's Georgia Alabama, where a cabbie would have to check the immigration status of one of his fares.
Did you hear what the former governor of Georgia, who is a Republican, said about that?
No, what's that?
He said it was dangerous for anybody that didn't have white skin to come to Georgia.
Was he being critical or congratulatory?
He was being critical. He meant it.
That's what I was getting back to is whether it's these states now talking about illegal aliens, or whether it's the pogroms of Eastern Europe, or the persecutions of Jewish people in Western Europe, running them out of this country and that country. This is all a thread that runs commonly through humanity, and it is the desire of the majority to blame its woes on people who are powerless to oppose their viciousness. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think with all these things that these different governors are doing, it's like they're laying the groundwork, you know, for child labor. And now I read where some people are willing to work for 25 cents an hour.
Yeah.
Just to have a job.
By the way, you got some mail in from James. He said, you know, Juanita, I confess something that I was propelled in a similar fashion as you, which is completely anathema insofar as I am anti-subscriber emphatically. I tuned into the station on TV which carried the entire Uncle Clarence and Anita Hill hearings. Remember those?
Okay.
And it actually fills eight full 8-hour tapes on VHS format, which requires an additional leap of faith of anyone who wants to see the horror and debacle as it occurred in those way back machine days of that kind of technology. It wasn't just you in Florida. James was there for Anita Hill and Clarence Thomas. And James says, good to hear you, Juanita. And dirtbags? Yeah, dirtbags.
Well, that was
so that,
right.
Yeah, you got a, you got a little amen. Nice. Yeah, you got a little amen from the congregation there, Juanita.
Oh, good, okay. But it it wasn't Anita Hill a what you call it?
Law professor?
No, wasn't she an honorable person?
Yes.
I mean, she still.
And what we're finding, you know, what we're finding out is that everything she tried to warn America about Clarence Thomas was the absolute unfly-blown God's honest truth. The guy is a crook.
Oh, yeah.
He has decided favorably for in like six different cases. He's decided in favor of a guy who gave him lots of money. Now, back in the 60s when it was Abe Fortas, he was eventually driven from the court over this. But since Clarence Thomas is a Republican, since Clarence Thomas is a Republican, he doesn't have to worry about it because this is the kind of miserable, sleazy conduct that we expect Republicans to take part in, and we don't do anything about it when they do.
And his wife is related to the Bushes, too.
Oh, dear God, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, and I've got a question for you. You know, there's a lot of people who say, oh, yeah, we're going to take back the House in 2012. Well, let's engage in a little fantasy for just a moment, Juanita. Let's assume for a moment that that the Democrats do take back the House in 2012. Neither you nor I has much in the way of rattling pocket change. But would you care to make a small wager on whether or not a democratically controlled House of Representatives would actually impanel impeachment hearings on Clarence Thomas? Because my money,
says,
they wouldn't, because we got to look forward and not back. And I probably just gave Sandra a hissy using that phrase.
Well, we have to get rid of people for the people, like.
Anthony Weiner, right.
I saw a man from New York City. He was almost in tears, and he said, they shouldn't have taken him away from us. Said he would fight for us. But that's the kind they don't want.
Well, the for-profit media certainly, no.
Including Blue Dog Democrats.
You know what I find interesting is that, there was no more solidly pro-APAC liberal Democrat out there, and even APAC would not mobilize its forces to defend him.
No, uh-uh. No, and he would come to the defense of others.
Yeah.
Well, now they got a thing about didn't know his name now, Cummings from Florida.
Mm-hmm. Elijah Cummings?
Yeah, supposedly he...
Yeah, they didn't hesitate to impeach him.
Yeah, but this is something now they're after him. Supposed to...
Oh, no, it wasn't Elijah Cummings. No, Elijah Cummings is from Maryland.
Okay. It's one of our congressmen down here.
Yeah.
Who was also impeached... But he got back.
Yeah, well, he was impeached as a
judge.
Yeah, he was impeached and removed from the federal bench, and then he ran and won a seat in Congress.
Yeah.
Juanita, I've got a roll, dear, but it's awfully good hearing from you.
You too. Welcome back. You gonna be back a while?
Oh, no, I'm gone again after Monday. The American History Lecture Series starts on Wednesday, and it's gonna be 3 weeks of serious hard work.
Now, is that going to be broadcast simultaneous or later on?
No, no, no. It'll be broadcast on the Horn Stream generally about 9 or 10 in the morning till about 3, 4, well, and sometimes even in the evening. So there will be programming. It just won't be me.
Okie dokie.
All right. Take care, Juanita.
Okay.
Bye
now.
And let's see. Are you still there? Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there. This is Chris from the 9-0.
Well, hey, Chris. How you doing?
Oh, I wish I could not think right now. I need to take up drinking or something.
If you do, don't forget the straw, because this is the kind of stuff where the liquor bottle is not enough. There must be a straw.
Yeah, I got to get the whole beer helmet thing. Things not to think about this week. Fukushima on the 14th. There's some lovely little videos online. Still can't find them now, which is kind of weird. Smoke and steam pouring out of it at about 2, 3 a.m. of Reactor 1, which means probably the melt pile finished doing its thing to the concrete on the bottom of the reactor, and is doing unpleasant things to the water table. So right about now, we should be looking, well, I should be looking up and looking for glowing clouds and all that good stuff. Stay out of the rain. All rain is downfall right now. Northern Hemisphere, this stuff is very fine. It's microparticulate. Second thing, Nebraska. People are flying these little drones all over, getting all kinds of neat pictures. People are getting pictures smuggled out and such. The place is not what they're saying it is. The condition is not what they're saying it is. This is pure rumor mill stuff, but some pictures have been showing up. Can't speak to their authenticity, but Nebraska might be going Fukushima now. I mean, they say they have another 6 inches of freeboard before it overtops their levees at the reactor, but apparently it's already in there. Also, there's 3 or 4 dams right above that reactor, which are, as the weather people are saying, about ready to go, which is just kind of terrifying. They're about to be overtopped, at which point dams get really, really unstable. And they
once you overtop a dam, it's not a dam anymore.
Well, this isn't. The thing is, everybody thinks dam, Hoover Dam, all made of concrete. Most dams, they have a little concrete section for the turbines, and most of it is earth. So you overtop the earth, all of a sudden you've got top erosion, and you are foobard.
Yeah, see, we know a little bit about that because all these dams holding back the toxic waste here in Appalachia, there ain't no concrete in them. They're all dirt.
I don't even want to think about that, man. What happens when your climate starts shifting to something more like a tropical rainforest?
No, our climate already is. Every one of these earthen dams in Appalachia is leaking.
Oh yeah, I also want to tell you about the Missouri River in Montana right now. They've got 3 dams again about ready to go, and they're not even using euphemisms. Apparently, they're getting torrential downpours. It's looking more like a monsoon. They just got 3 inches of rain on top of those the watershed that feeds 3 massive dams that are already full, and the snowpack is just starting to melt now. And they're expecting more rain soon. It's this La Nina thing. It's just public menace, really. They're pumping water out of these dams as fast as they can. They can't get it out fast enough. They're going to be overtopped. It's just a matter of time. Again, 3 dams in succession. One goes. If it's the top one, all 3 go. And I've been flying Google Earth down there, and I haven't found one yet. But rivers are lovely things for nuclear reactors. They've got lots of cooling potential. Do you know of anywhere on that Missouri River, or even the top of the Mississippi where it leads into? I think it leads into the Mississippi.
Yeah, it empties into the Mississippi at St. Louis.
Yeah. Are there any nuclear reactors along that run? Because I haven't found any yet, but I might have missed one. And if there are, think Fukushima. Again. Things not to think about.
Yeah, right. Nothing going on here, nothing to see. Move along, citizen. These are not the droids you're looking for.
Also, a story hit the bloody YouTubes yesterday, I think it was. I don't know if you talked about it earlier in the show, but the one guy who decided to try to rob the bank for $1, handed the note, just sat over here, waited for the police.
Yeah, we covered that last night, and I mean, I'm still just sort of gobsmacked by it. Hey, Chris, I got to get out of here because Rick Smith is on the way, but I hope we can carry this conversation on perhaps tomorrow evening.
Radio, talk to you later.
Later, Chris. Bye. I hate ending conversations that way, but I must because I've got 40 seconds left, actually more like 20. Thanks, everybody. It's wonderful to be back. Thanks to all of you who contribute to keep everything going. None of that happened this evening, but hopefully it will. Thank you. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org, and always, 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 Gina, Judy.